Welcome to Book of Boredom podcast on this Saturday, March the 21st. I'm here with my good friend, Adrian, who's been on the pod before.
Long time ago.
Been on it a couple of times. Welcome back. Thanks for helping me out with this episode. No one was really up for it. Gigi was off on holiday with Brad, and I mean, it's her loss. She decided to go away on holidays with her husband.
I'd probably go on holiday with Brad too if he asked me.
Yeah, Brad seems like pretty good value, to be honest. So thank you, Brad, for taking Gigi away. She probably needed it. Also, update on Gigi was going to listen to all of The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, and we were going to do a whole episode on it.
She was going to binge it, wasn't she?
She was going to binge it. She hasn't made it very far. She keeps getting sidetracked. Every time she goes to watch it, it's just so boring. She just can't get into it.
It's a judgment in itself, isn't it?
That's what I said to her. I think that is quite the judgment. This is from someone who was so excited last recording about, oh, it seems like your thing, you know? She can't do it. We'll put a pin in that. I'm not sure what we're going to do with that special episode. Also on The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, or The Boring Lives of Mormon Wives.
Can't be that secret if they're broadcast on TV, right?
That's right. There's nothing secret about it.
No.
The unsecret lives of mum talk women that are boring. Yeah, Taylor Frankie Paul, probably the most infamous of the mum talkers. She was going to be the new bachelorette. And then ABC in America, Kanda, after some new video footage of some domestic altercation came out. Maybe that's good for The Bachelorette because it would have been boring with her anyway.
We don't need the church to have extra publicity.
No. So this Taylor doesn't need more publicity at all. Church news, I'm going to put a pin in that. I haven't done my research. I am aware of just endless stories on the ex-Mormon subreddit. We're going to read Alma 14 and 15 today. But before we do that, we did start having a little chat earlier about Australian politics, didn't we? Because there have been some changes in Australia recently that you could argue are religion related. So I feel like we have a right to talk about that. I mean, from the to the, we should talk about it.
So there's certain phrases banned in the state we live in.
That's right.
Because it's been said that they cause people of the Jewish faith to feel persecuted and threatened because those very phrases have been used in a threatening way.
Yeah, that's probably true.
But we could say that one of those phrases is actually from a John Farnham song. And John Farnham is a very, very famous Australian pop star going back decades.
Yeah.
I would hope any magistrates or judges involved with this would kind of say, hey, were they singing at the time they said this phrase? Were they singing that special song?
Or yeah.
Were they using it in a threatening manner?
I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in whatever discussions they were having as they were coming up with this new law. How could this have not come up at some point that this is also a line from a very popular John Farnham song? He's arguably the best known pop icon from everybody's grandparents. But he's beloved as well. Like, I don't know anyone that hates him. I mean, you don't have to like his music, but nobody really hates him. He's just as Australian as Paul Hogan in a way, but probably more universally loved.
Because he hasn't gone to live in the US and complained about being taxed too much.
That's right, yeah. And I don't think there's been any scandals, like...
Generally respectable.
Generally respectable, not religious at all. He did play Jesus in Jesus Christ Superstar once, I think.
I've never seen that musical.
Yeah.
What am I missing? Is it an Andrew Lloyd Webber musical?
Good question. Not real good on my music history. You'd think I'd be better with a crappy music degree. And there's been some arrests on that new law. There was an 18-year-old woman.
She had it on her T-shirt.
Yeah. And I'm sure she was just trying to make a point. And I don't believe that she was trying to be anti-Semitic with it either. I mean, there's different ways you could take it. Some people would say there's no way to say that without being anti-Semitic. But to say that, you're basically saying that everyone sees the world the way you see it. And I just don't think that that was what was going through her mind. I mean, Australia's never had freedom of speech like the US does, which is probably pretty difficult for most Americans maybe to understand when they look at Australia and think, well, that's a free country, right? You can say whatever you like. Well, no, you can't.
I think it's interesting because the federal centre-right party here years ago were unhappy with a section of the Racial Discrimination Act because it was about verbally offending and things like that. Now, it's a state government that's put this legislation in because the federal government at the moment is not the centre-right, it's the centre-left.
Right.
It's only been a few short years, and those principles in wanting to amend that legislation have just dissipated.
It never ceases to amaze me how both sides of politics end up looking like each other repeatedly. You would think that the right parading itself as being the more fiscally honest and conservative and perhaps promoting the ideas of free speech and less censorship, you would think that they would, maybe, but they don't.
Well, they were always about, let's not have cancel culture. The left is all about cancel culture.
Right.
Now, in the state, the centre-right party are in power and they're effectively cancelling those two phrases of speech.
And when they cancel people, they legislate it. It's not just socially cancelled. This protester is in genuine hot water right now.
Yes.
I'll be curious to see, though, how a judge will end up judging on it, because given that it's such a new law, I think they're going to feel like throwing it out.
I've just looked up the Racial Discrimination Act I mentioned before. It was Section 18C, and it's about offensive behaviour because of race, colour, or national or ethnic origin. So you'd already say that if someone is offended, you know, because of their ethnic origin, because someone has made remarks about them being wiped out, which is a very nasty thing to say,
and
could be said in a very threatening manner.
Yep.
Those people are already liable under this section of legislation.
Right.
So why would you need to go further other than the politics of the day? You know, governments need to be seen to be doing something in response to admittedly an awful, horrible event.
Yes. Yeah, let's not forget how horrible that was, by the way.
But it wasn't so horrible that they agreed to go with the National Firearms Buyback Scheme.
The horrible incident you're referring to was Bondi, right?
Yeah.
Where Hanukkah was basically shot up by some Islamic extremists.
Hmm.
And the fellow who saved the day was also another nominally Islamic person but loved Australia and risked their life to take a gun off the older guy. But he wasn't the only guy that stepped in too. Like,
no, there were police officers, yeah.
Yeah, the police officers actually did a really good job too.
I think the fellow you mentioned was so railed in the media because he was a stranger and a passerby. It wasn't his duty in terms of his profession to do that.
No.
But he did it very effectively. I think it had some training from his former profession.
Okay.
He might have been military trained or in some kind of security force, because I remember someone saying about how he disarmed a person was just textbook perfect.
That's pretty good for a fruiterer.
Yeah.
Thanks, buddy. That's cool.
Yeah.
We'll have more immigrants like you. Thanks. That'd be great. The way I've understood the news that's come out since that was, really, we already had the infrastructure in place, the laws already in place to prevent something like Bondi happening, but for some reason, these people fell through the cracks and weren't vetted properly or whatever. Now, tell me the actual fact, because you probably know more about it than I do. Improve my knowledge on the situation. Tell me more about the buyback.
I don't recall how closely it was related to, you know, ASIO's actual investigation, or so I don't know how legal their purchase and collection of firearms were. But regardless of that, the national government's response was to try and decrease the number of firearms in the population. And one way of doing this is doing a buyback scheme where if someone's got some guns collecting dust, they can say, well, suddenly I don't even have to hawk them on said Facebook marketplace or whatever. The government would just probably buy them back at an attractive rate and therefore reduce the amount of guns in the population.
Okay.
Rather than doing a regulation, just saying you can't have more than two guns anymore, for example, is very much respecting the volition of the gun owner to say, well, we're not going to take your guns off you, but we'll purchase them off you.
We'll make you a deal.
Hmm. Firearm licensing is always a state matter, and I think it makes sense because the police force would be the ones that would facilitate this. Police force would have to do the buybacks. They're all state-based as well. I think it just made sense for this to be administered through the states, and then somewhere along that politically, the national government said, well, we're not going to fund this all ourselves. We're going to ask the states to fund 50-50. And some states, I think, said yes, and others were silent for a while before declining.
Wow.
I think the Northern Territory was one, and Queensland.
Queensland declined, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. I totally missed all of that news. See, I've got my head too much in US news. I need you to come in here and fill me in on what's happening in my own country. Thanks, Adrian. The interesting thing, too, about all of the gun restrictions in Australia is that it was our centre-right government that initiated the crackdown, which I found kind of surprising.
This was the Howard government after the Port Arthur massacre.
That's right. See, we do have massacres in Australia, and it's not a pissing contest. I wish we didn't, but we do, unfortunately. And that was a real bad one.
Well, it shocked the nation.
It did shock the nation.
Port Arthur is a historical site where there was once a convict settlement, jail settlement, really, in Tasmania. It's a beautiful site.
It is.
It's a tourist place now. You go and spend the day there.
Yeah.
And many did. And one day there was a fellow there with a gun that
shot up a cafe.
Yeah.
Since that happened, well, there was a few years where I lived in Tasmania and I went and visited the site. And it is an interesting site.
Hmm.
Jesus Christ. I mean, how that even happened is bonkers, but they put the law through so quickly after that, surprisingly. And the other thing the Howard government gave us was the GST. That's another thing. You wouldn't expect the centre-right government to give us more taxes, but they did.
It's a goods and services tax. It's a consumption tax. So when you spend your money on things, you pay that tax rather than an income tax where you are taxed when you earn money.
Now they do both.
They do both, yes.
We tax it when it comes in and tax it when it goes out.
We may disagree here, but if you had a centre-right government that just spends but doesn't raise taxes and just puts you more into debt, we could say, well, is that financially responsible?
No, it isn't. I don't hate Johnny Howard. Apparently we were in a budget surplus for a while. I mean, that's almost unthinkable in most modern democracies, I would imagine. I think almost all of them run in debt. Why does it have to be that way? Why does it have to be that way? I'm looking at you, America. Well, thanks for filling me in.
Happy to do so.
Watch this space. We'll see what happens after Bondi with law changes.
I do think it's interesting, though, that we get so much news about the US or to an extent the UK, but in terms of actual news coverage about our own country, it's a little bit lacking in comparison in terms of volume.
Yeah, true.
Maybe it's just a symptom of the state we're in that we don't have very good media environment, media competition.
Maybe it is.
The most famous newspaper we have.
SMH.
I was going to say the Courier Mail.
Yeah, are you talking about Queensland?
I'm talking about Brisbane.
Brisbane, Brisvegas.
Yeah.
The one that we're in right now.
It's a Rupert Murdoch paper.
Oh, is it?
Hmm.
I haven't read the Courier Mail in ages. I'm surprised they're still going. They must be on their last legs, surely.
Well, not that I'm that much a fan of it, but I do hope that we still have a variety of news organisations because just to have one is pretty poor.
Yeah, no competition.
Yeah, well, very little competition. I mean, there is the Brisbane Times. I think that's a Nine paper.
Did you say it's run by Nine, like Channel Nine?
There was legislation in Australia going way back that was against media consolidation. And then when that legislation was sunsetted or overturned, Channel 9 bought out, I think it was Fairfax.
Really?
Yeah. So I remember it was very strange to hear like a newspaper named after a TV channel at the time.
That is weird. But I mean, if it provides yet another point of journalism, maybe it's useful.
Yeah. Even if they have political leanings and they may omit things that don't fit their political viewpoint, particularly in editorials, they can still be effective at holding truth to power, accountability.
Or the Democrats' slogan, we keep the bastards honest.
There's an Australian political history for you right there.
Yes, yes. Not US Democrats. This is the Australian Democratic Party. They are left wing, sort of.
They were famously centrist, actually.
Maybe that's more it.
Yeah, they were a Senate party and
they disbanded, didn't they? Like
something like that.
I think they have, yeah.
If they're still going, they're not a political force anymore.
Ah, well, there you go. Things come, things go. Some things stick around.
Mm.
Like the words of Joseph Smith.
Indeed, shall we?
Let's do it. So, Alma 14. Now, you're going to have to read the preamble.
In beautiful italic type. It is right in front of me. So I shall start. Alma and Amulek are imprisoned and smitten. Now, smitten for me means like, you're nodding.
Yeah, like romantically smitten.
Yeah, as in you're infatuated and you're losing some mental faculties due to that infatuation, right?
Right, right. Yeah, and like big love hearts on the eyes,
that's right?
Just
being struck by Cupid's arrow.
That's
and,
right.
Yeah.
He loves me.
So I read that part of the introduction. I thought, how does that make sense? But we shall continue and see.
Mm.
The believers and the holy scriptures are burned by fire.
Oh, wow.
not by acid, by fire. These martyrs are received by the Lord in glory. The prison walls are rent and fall. Alma and Amulek are delivered, and their persecutors are slain.
Ooh.
About 82 to 81 BC.
About.
No one's counting exactly the years or days, are they?
No.
May I begin?
You may begin.
And it came to pass, after he had made an end of speaking unto the people, many of them did believe on his words and began to repent and to search the scriptures. But the more part of them.
Oh, God.
A little bit awkward. But the more part of them were desirous that they might destroy Alma and Amulek. For they were angry with Alma because of the plainness of his words unto Zizrom.
Not the plainness of his name.
And they also said that Amulek had lied unto them and had reviled against their law and also against their lawyers and judges. And they were also angry with Alma and Amulek, and because they had testified so plainly against their wickedness, they sought to put them away privily.
Privily?
Privily. I've not heard that adverb very often.
Do you know what that means?
No, I have no idea.
I'm going to have to look that up.
I was in a meeting the other day at work, and a fellow was using the word agreeance several times.
Oh.
I almost stopped him.
Oh, I hate that word.
It's not a word. It's not in the dictionary.
It's not a word. Oh, I'm pretty sure that word comes up in my job as well, and it has ticked me off. But I keep it pressed down, you know.
Mm.
I don't lose my cool at work.
No.
I want to keep this job.
There was a great book I read a few years ago called Horrible Words. The author of that book had great fun at looking at how people complain about words that aren't words, but it encouraged us to all relax a bit, go with the flow that languages change, and have fun making up our own words.
Right.
So if that opportunity comes up today, let's...
Let's make up some new words.
Yeah.
So privily is an archaic adverb meaning to do something secretly, privately, or in a manner concealed from others. It is used to describe actions done in confidence, stealth, or in a way that people do not know. And I think that word sums up Joseph Smith pretty right. So maybe that's why Joseph knew the word.
So going back to that verse, they were angry. Because they had testified so plainly against their wickedness, they sought to put them away privily. So put them away in secret or something like that.
Won't people notice if they put them away at all? What does this mean?
It's a mystery. Let's continue.
Verse 4. But it came to pass that they did not, but they took them and bound them with strong cords. Well, isn't that good? They didn't bind them with weak cords, Adrian. They bound them with strong cords.
Let's say power cord.
Power cord. I got some power cords here. We run on 240 volts in Australia. Let's get fired up. And took them before the chief judge of the land. And the people went forth and witnessed against them. Well, that's not very privily. Okay, I guess that they're not doing that anymore.
Change of plan.
Testifying that they had reviled against the law, and their lawyers and judges of the land, and also of all the people that were in the land, and also testified that there was but one God, and that he should send his son among the people, but he should not save them. And many such things did the people testify against Alma and Amulek. Full stop. It's like, let's throw the kitchen sink about this mob into one sentence. Now, this was done before the chief judge of the land. Yes, you just said that earlier. And it came to pass that Zizrom was astonished at the words which had been spoken. How else were the words to be? And he also knew concerning the blindness of the minds, which he had caused among the people by his lying words. And his soul began to be harrowed up under a consciousness of his own guilt.
Yay!
He began to be encircled about by the pains of hell.
Is Zizrom like the judge?
No. Maybe Zizrom is a priest. Oh, God. Zizrom's been silenced by the words of Alma for so many chapters now. I should ask AI, and then I'll just accept it as truth, because who fact checks AI, right?
Would the hallucinations of AI do any harm to the Book of Mormon? I guess that's the proper question.
You know, that Zeezrom is also a city. It's a person and a city.
Maybe the city was named after the person?
Maybe. Tell you what, I'm going to ask AI. I sense a groan.
I have not groaned.
I'll use my favorite language model by ZAI called GLM. I usually use it for coding. We'll see how it does with the Book of Mormon.
While you do that, shall I continue to read?
Go for it.
And it came to pass that he began to cry unto the people, saying, Behold, I am guilty, and these men are spotless before God. And he began to plead for them from that time forth. But they reviled him, saying, Art thou also possessed with the devil? Shouldn't you be possessed by? And they spit upon him, and cast him out from among them, and also all those who believed in the words which had been spoken by Alma and Amulek. And they cast them out, and sent men to cast stones at them. Why didn't they throw the stones themselves? Were they too heavy?
They're outsourcing the stoning.
Division of labor.
Smitty was all about division of labor, let's face it. He liked people doing things for him.
Mm. And they brought their wives and children together, and whosoever believed or had been taught to believe in the word of God, they caused that they should be cast into the fire, and they also brought forth their records, which contained the Holy Scriptures. When it said records there, I just thought LPs. And cast them into the fire also, that they may be burned and destroyed by fire. I'm just thinking of how people burned Beatles records when I said they were bigger than Jesus.
I know, right? So satanic.
I'm sure someone was there saying, it's been done before. Look at Alma 14.
Yeah.
And it came to pass that they took Alma and Amulek and carried them forth to the place of martyrdom, that they might witness the destruction of those who were consumed by fire.
Well, that escalated quickly, didn't it?
But we haven't heard that Zeezrom's also being carried.
We went from them having a nice, gentle discussion and Zeezrom being quite subdued and silenced by the amazing words that Alma and his little fuck buddy were saying, and now all of a sudden he's being burned to death. What's going on? Well, I have an answer here on who Zeezrom was.
Mm-hmm.
He was a lawyer.
Okay.
Which makes sense, because Smitty hates lawyers.
Maybe he was the lawyer for Amulek and Alma?
No. I think... Here we go. The debate with Amulek. The pivotal moment in Zeezrom's story occurs when he attempts to cross-examine Amulek. So that's Alma's friend. Zeezrom offered Amulek a substantial bribe. That's right. I remember that. 6 onties of silver. Gee, this language model's good. The theological trap. Da-da-da-da-da. Anyway, it sounds like he might have had a lower judge role as well, because why would he be trying to bribe him then? Maybe he's a lawyer slash judge.
A registrar.
Maybe. Is that what they call them?
Someone who can decide certain cases who's not a magistrate is a registrar.
A registrar. Clearly Smitty didn't know that word, just like I didn't. I
may have that wrong, but...
I've heard the word before.
Hmm.
Well, aren't we all for the better of learning that? Okay, now, where are we up to?
Number 10.
All right. And when Amulek saw the pains of the women and children who were consuming in the fire.
What were they consuming? Wasn't the fire consuming them? Let's pause the fire. The grammar's not right. Pause the fire.
That just didn't sound right. He also was pained. And he said unto Alma, How can we witness this awful scene? Therefore, let us stretch forth our hands. Oh, that'll help. And exercise the power of God which is in us. Can't God exercise it on his own? Why does he need your stupid hands to do it? And save them from the flames. But Alma said unto him, Hold my beer. No, he didn't say that. The Spirit constraineth me that I must not stretch forth mine hand.
You put your hands in first.
It looks a bit hot. You try it first. They're having this whole conversation while people are just burning to death in sheer agony. It's like, now hang on. We don't want to put forth our hand. For behold, the Lord receiveth them up unto himself in glory. And he doth suffer that they may do this thing.
If it says the Lord receiveth them, is that religious speak for their dying?
Yeah, but I think up into heaven or something.
And he does suffer that they may do this thing. I mean, aren't they suffering? Isn't it a terrible way to die?
Yeah, I think suffer in that context, it's old-timey speak for that's what he wants them to do.
That's awful.
It really is awful. Why would you use that word in that context?
I'm only comforted that they're fictional.
Yeah, that's right.
It's just an awful thought.
That's right. If you're suffering at home from having listened to this story, suffer no more. It's not real. Okay, so he doth suffer that they may do this thing. When you're using the word thing in a holy book, I really feel like you're just being lazy with the language. Surely there can be better words than placeholders like thing, unless they're talking about the Addams family.
Think how much Mormonism may have been if it had a good editor.
Yeah. It may not have sent people to sleep as much. Or that the people may do this thing unto them, according to the hardness of their hearts, that the judgments which he shall exercise upon them in his wrath may be just. Oh, God. And the blood of the innocent shall stand as a witness against them, yea, and cry mightily against them at the last day. Well, it sounds like they're crying pretty mightily right now.
So is this people being too skeptical and therefore it's okay for them to burn? Because that's what usually the hardness of the heart thing is about, being stubborn or something like that.
Yeah, that's how I read that. It's like, no, these people have to suffer just to show how hard-hearted these people doing it are. That way, at the end of days, we can have a real good case against them. What a shitty God.
I mean, the whole string of words is confusing to me.
It is. Like, he just runs one thing into the next, but yeah. Now Amulek said unto Alma, want to get a room? Behold, perhaps they will burn us also. You know, that is a very astute point, Amulek. Okay, so they're not actually burning Amulek and Alma.
No, they started with the women and children, apparently.
Why are they burning the women and children? Are these the people that liked what Alma and Amulek were saying?
We're not far into the chapter, and I've already lost track.
Pretty much, hey. Seems like Zizrom's been kind of converted by Alma's words, right? And they took Zizrom and the women and children? Was it the men as well? Oh my God, this is so badly written. And here we go. And they brought their wives and children together. Whose wives and children? And brought forward their records, which contained the Holy Scriptures.
The prior sentence, talking about Alma and Amulek, the next one it says, they brought their wives and children. It must be the wives and children of Alma and Amulek.
Oh, that can't be right, surely.
But then it just says, and when Amulek saw the pains of the women and children who were consuming in the fire, it's not said wives and children, it said the women. So, no, just some people's wives.
It says, and they spit upon him, that being Zizrom, and cast him out from among them, and also all those who believed in the words which had been spoken by Alma and Amulek. So there must be a whole bunch of people that liked what they said, and they cast them out and sent men to cast stones at them. Okay, so there's a whole following that Alma and Amulek have that are now being stoned, along with
some being burnt.
And then they start burning, and they brought their wives and children together. Now, I reckon the wives and the children are of the people that the stones are being cast at the moment.
So, I don't like to try and get into the headspace of a mob, but if they're so angry that they are burning people to death and stoning them, wouldn't they start with Amulek and Alma if they're the instigators of it?
Yeah.
Seems a bit odd.
That is really, really odd. I don't get it.
And you've just finished up. Now, Amulek said unto Alma, behold, that perhaps they will burn us also. Perhaps? Why perhaps? I mean,
that seems like that would be the first thing.
It does. Anyway, shall I continue?
Yeah. Verse 13, yeah.
And Alma said, be it according to the will of the Lord, but behold, our work is not finished, therefore they burn us not. It's not making any sense at all. Now it came to pass that when the bodies of those who had been cast into the fire were consumed, and also the records which were cast in with them, the chief judge of the land came and stood before Alma and Amulek, as they were bound, and he smote them with his hand upon their cheeks, and said unto them, after what ye have seen, will ye preach again unto this people, that they shall be cast into a lake of fire and brimstone? And where'd they get the brimstone from?
What are they talking about?
They're kind of saying, now that you've seen what we do to people like you, will you preach again to these people?
But why wouldn't they just stone them or burn them? Because they did to the other people. That'd put an end to it.
I'm as puzzled as you are. They've kind of said, we've burned these people and stoned these other people. Now let that be a lesson to you. Don't preach anymore. It just doesn't make much sense.
There doesn't need to be a lesson if they just kill them. Anyway.
Behold, ye see that ye had not power to save those who had been cast into the fire, neither has God saved them, because they were of thy faith. And the judge smote them again upon their cheeks, Gosh, who came off the worst of that?
Yeah.
Being burned alive or being smoked by someone and asked, what say ye for yourselves?
Now, this judge was after the order and faith of Neha, who slew Gideon, and it came to pass that Alma and Amulek answered him nothing, that he smote them again.
Oh.
And delivered them to the officers to be cast into prison. What are you doing? Why prison? You could have burnt them, you dickhead. And when they had been cast into prison 3 days, oh, there's that magic number, there came many lawyers, because Smitty doesn't like lawyers, and judges, and priests, and teachers, who were of the profession of Nehor. And they came in unto the prison to see them, and they questioned them about many words.
But they were met with silence because they asked, is agreeance a word?
That's right. They asked them things like, is smitten a word, and is smote a word, and...
Privily.
All right. Oh, now I've totally lost my spot.
It's my turn.
Good.
And it came to pass that the judge stood before them and said, why do you not answer the words of this people? Know ye not that I have power to deliver you up unto the flames? And he commanded them to speak, but they answered nothing. I'm sure out of bravery, not for fear. And it came to pass that they departed and went their ways, and came again on the morrow. And the judge also smote them again on their cheeks. Gosh, he's not only burning people alive, he's coming back the next day and slapping them on the cheeks again.
Yes. It's like a Monty Python sketch. I smite you on the cheek. Maybe it's their bum cheeks, do you think? Spanking them.
That's just too strange a thought.
But maybe it's like public corporal punishment.
But I think the use of bottom cheeks is only like a recent thing in the English language.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
And many came forth also and smote them, saying, will ye stand again and judge this people and condemn our law? If ye have such great power, why do you not deliver yourselves?
Well, that's a great question, isn't it?
They just like being smitten.
Yeah. They're sadists and they're getting off on it right now.
Masochists.
Masochists. Right. Got that one wrong.
That's right.
Yes.
Your turn.
Okay. And many such things did they say unto them. Oh, did they, Joseph? Just many such things. Gnashing their teeth. Upon them and spitting on them and saying, how shall we look when we are damned? Damn fine. And many such things, yea, all manner of such things did they say unto them. Get to the point. And thus they did mock them for many days. And they did withhold food from them that they might lose weight. No, that they might hunger, and water that they might thirst. Yes, that's what happens when you withhold food and water, you moron! And they also did take from them their clothes that they were naked. Yes, that's what happens when... And thus they were bound with strong cords, or as we like to say here in Book of Boredom, power cords. And confined in prison. And it came to pass after they had thus suffered for many days. And it was on the 12th day, in the 10th month, in the 10th year of the reign of the judges over the people of Nephi, that the chief judge over the land of Ammonihah and many of their teachers
and their lawyers
and the butcher and the baker and the candlestick maker too went in unto the prison where Alma and Amulek were bound with cords.
They're still bound.
They're still bound with the power cords. Take it away.
And the chief judge stood before them and smote them again and said unto them, if ye have the power of God, deliver yourselves from these bands. Now I'm thinking rubber bands. And then we will believe you that the Lord will destroy these people according to your words. And it came to pass that they all went forth and smote them, saying the same words, even until the last. And when the last had spoken unto them, the power of God was upon Alma and Amulek, and they rose and stood upon their feet.
He could have just said...
They stood up.
And they stood up. Verse 26. And Alma cried, saying, How long shall we suffer these great afflictions, O Lord? O Lord, give us strength. No, give the readers of this serious fucking strength. According to our faith, which is in Christ, who hasn't even been born yet.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, right. Why are we even talking about him? Even unto deliverance, and they broke the cords with which they were bound. I guess someone cut the power to the power cords. And when the people saw this, they began to flee, for the fear of destruction had come upon them. And it came to pass that so great was their fear that they fell to the earth. Well, they were fleeing and now they're falling on the ground because they're still scared. If you were still scared, why are you falling to the ground? And did not obtain the outer door of the prison.
Probably stuck to its hinges.
Oh, they didn't make it out of the prison is what they're saying. And the earth shook mightily, and the walls of the prison were rent in twain. So that they fell on the earth. And the chief judge, and the lawyers, and priests, and teachers, and the candlestick maker, and the butcher, and the baker, who smote upon Alma and Amulek, were slain by the fall thereof.
So they were all standing near the walls, and the walls fell down and killed them all.
I guess there aren't any priests or teachers or lawyers anymore.
And Alma and Amulek came forth out of the prison, and they were not hurt, for the Lord had granted unto them power. From the power cords, obviously.
Obviously.
According to their faith, which was in Christ, who has not yet existed. And they straightway came forth out of the prison, and they were loosed from their bands.
He already said that too.
Yeah. And the prison had fallen to the earth, and every soul within the walls thereof, save it were Alma and Amulek, was slain. And they straightway came forth into the city. Couldn't they have put their clothes back on?
Yeah.
I'm just going to put that there. Not mentioned, but straightway. They still make it. Picture that. Last verse. Now the people, having heard a great noise, came running together by multitudes to know the cause of it. And when they saw Alma and Amulek coming forth out of the prison, we know how they're dressed, and the walls thereof had fallen to the earth, they were struck with great fear and fled upon the presence of Alma and Amulek, even as a goat fleeth with her young from two lions.
What the fuck? That's so random.
I didn't know that lions and goats frequented the same biospheres. I thought, like, one was the savannah and the goats, I don't know.
Do they even have lions in America?
Well, no.
They have bobcats.
Well, they have big cats. They don't have lions.
No.
Anyway, back to the mental imagery of people running away from Alma and Amulek. Not because they're two strange naked men.
No.
No, but as a goat fleeth with her young from two lions. And thus they did flee from the presence of Alma and Amulek. And, you know, I would flee as well.
Absolutely. I like to stay away from religious people.
Particularly when they're unclothed.
That's right. And let's face it, we've all been walking through the city at some point when some barely clad person raving on about some vaguely religious thing has been wandering by. And you could argue that Alma and Amulek probably looked like that.
Let's power on to chapter 15. I'm going to read the introduction.
Go for it.
Alma and Amulek go to Sidom and establish a church. Alma heals Zizrom. So Zizrom was injured somehow. Who joins the church. Many are baptized and the church prospers. Alma and Amulek go to Zarahemla.
Oh, yes.
About 81 BC.
Ooh.
And it came to pass that Alma and Amulek were commanded to depart out of that city, and they departed. So the judges and that were all destroyed by someone else commanding them. They probably just said, go put your clothes on. I don't care where you go. Just go somewhere and put your clothes on.
They left such a destruction in their wake. It's like, let's get out of this place.
And they departed and came out even into the land of Sidom. And behold, there they found all the people who had departed out of the land of Ammonihah, who had been cast out and stoned because they believed in the words of Alma. So they were stoned but not killed by those stones, apparently. And they related unto them all that had happened unto their wives and children, and also concerning themselves, and of their power of deliverance. Gosh, aren't we happy they survived?
So they were stoned, but they survived.
But not the wives and children who were burnt.
Oh, okay, right.
And these poor guys were smote on the cheek.
That's right.
Oh, wow.
In a Monty Python-esque sketch.
Mm. And also Zizrom lay sick at Sidon with a burning fever, which was caused by the great tribulations of his mind on his account of his wickedness. For he supposed that Alma and Amulek were no more. Is that what's supposed to be wicked here? I don't understand. And he supposed that they had been slain because of his iniquity. And this great sin and his many other sins did harrow up in his mind until it did become exceedingly sore, having no deliverance. Therefore, he began to be scorched with a burning heat.
Okay. Sounds like he's got a mental illness. Now, when he heard that Alma and Amulek were in the land of Siddim, his heart began to take courage, and he sent a message immediately unto them, desiring them to come all over him. Onto him, I mean. Unto him. To come unto him. That's it. And it came to pass that they went immediately, obeying the message which he had sent unto them. And they went in unto the house, unto Zizrom, and they found him upon his bed. Well, you don't say. Sick, being very low with a burning fever. They gave him fever. And his mind also was exceedingly sore. Because of
his iniquities.
And when he saw them, he stretched forth his hand. Who stretched forth his hand?
Zizrom, he's clicking along.
And he besought them that they would heal him. Besought.
Besought. Mm.
I don't know if that's a word, but I'm going to look that up right now.
Mm.
Ask urgently and fervently to do something. Implore. Entreat.
I think entreat would have worked better.
I think so too.
I like the word entreat.
Entreat.
Hmm.
Hmm. Ugh. Smitty, you keep making me lose my spot. It's all your fault, Joseph.
Verse 6.
Thanks. And it came to pass that Alma said unto him, taking him by the hand, believest thou in the power of love? I mean, Christ unto salvation?
And he answered, yay! I believe all the words that thou hast taught. I can just imagine someone rambling, saying, yeah, yeah, all that, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
All of that.
He's in a fever, after all.
Sure, all of that, honey.
And Alma said, if thou believest in the redemption of Christ, thou
canst be healed.
That's priceless. And he said, yeah, I believe according to thy words. Again, just, yeah, whatever you say. Sure.
Yeah, whatever. And then Alma cried unto the Lord, saying, oh, Lord, our God, have mercy on this man. I mean, I reckon they're all pretty lucky to have not been stoned and burned alive, so I think that he already did, right?
Mm.
And heal him according to his faith. Why is it always got to be according to something which is in Christ?
Mm. Not in Mammon. Just checking.
And when Alma had said these words, Zizrom leaped upon his feet and began to walk. And this was done to the great astonishment of all the people. And the knowledge of this went forth throughout all the land of Siddim. He wasn't lame. He was just in mental turmoil.
Mm.
Why is it so astonishing that he's leaping out of bed?
Maybe the people of Siddim are known for being easily astonished.
Yeah, I think we've mentioned that before. Okay, and Alma baptized Zizrom. Wasn't enough to just jump out of bed. Now you've got to dive into a body of water. Unto the Lord, and he began from that time forth to preach unto the people. Not another one.
Mm. And Alma established a church in the land of Sidon and consecrated priests and teachers in the land to baptize unto the Lord whosoever were desirous to be baptized. And it came to pass that they were many, for they did flock in from all the region around about Sidon and were baptized. But as to the people that were in the land of
I like to call it ammonia.
Okay. Well, I'll go with that. The land of ammonia. But they remained a hard-hearted and stiff-necked people.
But they were clean.
and they repented not of their sins, ascribing all the power of Alma and Amulek to the devil. For they were of the profession of Nehor, and did not believe in the repentance of their sins.
And it came to pass that Alma and Amulek, having forsaken all his gold and silver and his precious things, what about his family, which were in the land of Ammonia for the word of God? He being rejected by those who were once his friends, and also by his father and his kindred, because they just can't stand to listen to this horseshit any longer. And if you feel that way at home, that's okay, just like spin on. Therefore, after Alma having established the church at Siddim, seeing a great check,
yay,
seeing that the people were checked as to the pride of their hearts and began to humble themselves before God. Is there like a giant tick in the sky or something? And began to assemble themselves together, like Lego, to worship God before the altar, watching and praying continually, that they might be delivered from Satan and from death and from destruction.
Well, I don't know about Satan or destruction, but I'm pretty sure they weren't delivered from death now, were they?
No.
Otherwise, they'd still be kicking around.
That's right.
Saying, remember us, we're from Sidom.
Which doesn't correspond to any known American location.
Now, as I said, Alma, having seen all these things, therefore he took Amulek and came over to the land of Zarahemla and took him to his own house and did administer unto him in his tribulations and strengthened him in the Lord.
Thought he was going to ask for his hand in marriage or something there for a moment.
And thus ended the 10th year of the reign of the judges over the people of Nephi.
Nephi, I like that. Nephi. It's Nephi.
Nephi.
That's it. That was only 19 verses.
I'm thankful. 19 is enough for me.
It's a reprieve. Yeah, I am done. Thank you for listening to this horrible passage from the horrible book. And thank you for helping me do that today, Adrian.
And I got the bonus of learning the word privily.
Me too.
And learning the word Zizrom. I've had the privilege of naming a new pet. Zizrom's on the top of the list.
Or if your kids are spawning one day and they're wondering, what shall they call their own kids?
They'll ask me for a joke name for a middle name. And I'll say, I've got just the one.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, y'all. And we'll see you next time with some more boring insights into the Book of Boredom that is the Book of Mormon. Adios.